Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm Ira Melman. The countdown is underway, leading to the next U.S. presidential election. For the Republican Party, there are many questions left to be answered.
There's no heir to the throne, as it were, as there often is in Republican races. It's a wide open race.
VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone is here in the cafe with that. Have you heard about free-range parenting?
The idea of free-range parenting is really that your children need the freedom to explore. They need to be alone without parents. They learn to take risks. They learn to be independent. They learn to solve their own problems.
But as Julie Tabo reports, that has led to some unexpected problems for one family. And Roseanne Skirbel stops by to tell us about a new satellite that has been launched to more closely examine solar storms.
That gives us between 15 to 60 minutes to warn people on Earth that a very strong storm, for instance, if we measure it at the Discover satellite, is coming into the Earth.
All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. The early stage of the 2016 U.S. presidential election campaign is well underway, with a huge field of potential Republican contenders on one side and Democrat Hillary Clinton on the other. Many of the Republicans are struggling for attention, while Clinton seems intent on avoiding the spotlight, at least for the moment. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is in the cafe with more.
They are the new faces of the Republican Party, and many are considering a run for the White House 2 years from now. Among them is Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, a fierce critic of President Barack Obama and winner of a recent test vote at a conference of conservative activists.
We will challenge you in the courts. We will battle you at the ballot box. Mr. President, we will not let you shred our Constitution.
Paul is likely to have plenty of competition, including fellow Senator Ted Cruz of Texas.
People are hurting tragically, and we need to turn this country around. We did it in 1980 with a grassroots movement that became the Reagan Revolution, and let me tell you, the same thing is happening all over today.
Cruz and Paul are popular with Tea Party activists, a force within the Republican Party since they helped win control of the House of Representatives in 2010. Former Alaska governor and vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin urges Republican leaders not to take the Tea Party for granted.
You know that 2010 election victory that swept you into power? You didn't build that. The Tea Party did.
The split within the Republican Party will play out during this year's midterm congressional election, says Carol Doherty with the Pew Research Center in Washington.
Well, the Republican Party's going through a lot of turmoil, a little bit of division. They're struggling to find their way a bit, as parties out of power are often in this position. Democrats have been in this position in the past.
Some Republicans play down the discord, including the party's 2012 vice presidential candidate, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan.
It's Tea Party versus establishment, libertarians versus social conservatives. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord. Look, I'm Irish. That's my idea of a family reunion.
Ryan is a possible contender in 2016, and another is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
We don't get to govern if we don't win. And it's not only bad when we don't get to govern because we don't get to mold and change our society. What's worse is they do. And they're doing it to us right now.
But Doherty says for the first time in decades, there is no clear Republican frontrunner.
I really think it's going to be interesting. There's no heir to the throne, as it were, as there often is in Republican races. It's a wide open race.
It's a different story for Democrats looking ahead to 2016. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton remains a strong favorite if she runs. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
A married couple from the U.S. state of Maryland made headlines recently when it was discovered that they permit their two young children to play at a nearby park unsupervised and then allow them to walk home alone. Their actions have triggered a national debate about different parenting styles. VOA's Julie Tabo talked with the family about the controversy.
Rafi and Devorah Mehti like to play at their neighborhood park.
Finders! Keepers!
And walk home afterwards by themselves. The parents of the 10 and 6-year-old defend a style of child-rearing some call free-range parenting.
The idea of free-range parenting is really that your children need the freedom to explore. They need to be alone without parents. They learn to take risks. They learn to be independent. They learn to solve their own problems.
But on a recent afternoon, police officers stopped the children as they walked along a busy avenue and drove them home.
They lectured us on how dangerous it is. And
what happened next shocked their father, Alexander Mateev.
When they brought him home, I thought they would just release the kids. It's my house, my kids. But apparently they had some procedure to go through, which required me to give my ID.
He was even more worried when Child Protective Services arrived a few hours later. CPS opened an investigation based on a Maryland law that makes it illegal to leave a child younger than 8 with anyone under the age of 13.
There you go.
But Danielle Mateev says the law doesn't apply in this case.
And it says that children may not be left unattended while confined or locked in a building, dwelling, enclosure, or vehicle. They were not locked and confined anywhere. They were outdoors playing in a playground or walking home.
The incident has left the parents angry and the children traumatized.
At first I was just a bit annoyed because we know that they're not allowed to do this and what we're doing is allowed. And then I started to kind of get scared because I thought that maybe they would like arrest my dad or something.
Mateev says she remembers her own childhood when she was allowed to go practically everywhere alone.
Up until this generation, it was perfectly normal for children to go to the park by themselves or down the block or run errands for their parents or walk home from school. It's only very recently that this has become unusual.
Many parents say today it's not safe to leave children alone.
We're going to be talking about the physical development mostly today.
Holly Schifrin, professor of psychology at the University of Mary Washington in Virginia, believes any extreme form of parenting is unhealthy. She's co-authored a book about overprotective helicopter parents.
Parenting in that manner, really hovering and solving their children's problems for them, that they're sending an unintentional message to their kids in two ways. One, that the child may not be competent to handle those problems on their own, and the parent needs to step in and do that. And then the other is they're preventing their child from developing that competence because they're not getting a chance to practice those skills of problem resolution.
So far, the Métis parents have not been charged with neglect, and the investigation is expected to finish by the end of the month. Meanwhile, Rafi and Devorah still play at the park and walk home unattended. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Silver Spring, Maryland.
A new satellite is on a 1.5 million kilometer, 110-day journey toward the sun. Once it reaches its orbit, Discover, the Deep Space Climate Observatory, will replace an aging craft to monitor space weather. And it comes none too soon. 2015 marks the peak of the 11-year solar cycle when extreme weather on the sun can most impact life on Earth. VOA's Roseanne Scurvil is here with more.
And liftoff.
Discover is headed to a place in deep space where the gravitational pull of the sun and of Earth cancel each other out. That makes it an ideal spot for the craft to monitor the sun. From this faraway outpost, it will document the continuous stream of charged solar particles. Thomas Berger is director of the NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder, Colorado. He says while we are mostly protected by the Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere, large-scale eruptions from the sun called coronal mass ejections can still be dangerous.
So those are really, really large magnetic clouds that are expelled from the sun at very, very high speeds. And when those impact the Earth, that's like a tsunami, if you will, or a hurricane impacting the Earth in terms of space weather.
While in space weather can disable electric power grids, knock out satellites, interrupt radio signals and aviation communication systems, services we depend on in our daily lives. Full recovery from a really bad solar storm could take 4 to 10 years and cost between $1 and $2 trillion, according to a recent scientific report.
It's really not much we can do about it, given that the sun is a gigantic star and we're just a tiny little planet in its orbit. However, NOAA's job, and the Space Weather Prediction Center's job in particular, is to predict these phenomena and give people the watches, warnings, and alerts that they need to take mitigational action.
Discover will sit like a buoy in space. It replaces ACE, the 17-year-old craft that has worked long beyond its design life. Berger says Discover will ensure there's no gap in real-time solar observations.
That gives us between 15 to 60 minutes to warn people on Earth that a very strong storm, for instance, if we measure it at the Discover satellite, is coming into the Earth. 15 to 60 minutes is enough time for power grid operators to take mitigational actions such as spooling up other generators to balance loads. It's enough time for satellite operators to take their satellites into safe mode if necessary. So it's enough time. We'd like more, of course.
Plans are underway for more instruments to provide that earlier warning.
It would be great if we had something even farther towards the sun. And that's possible using perhaps solar sail technologies in the future. But right now, what we can do is put something in that gravitational sweet spot, if you will, and leave it there. And that's the Discover satellite.
Discover, like ACE, will issue planetary-scale predictions and warnings. NOAA plans to use ACE data, too, as long as the aging satellite survives.
We can tell you something's coming in. However, with the ACE data in the future and developments in models that are very exciting, the upcoming models we're developing, we'll be able to tell you exactly which regions of the Earth will be more or less susceptible to these incoming solar storms.
This will mean, for the first time, warnings will advise not only that a magnetic storm is heading towards Earth, but where it will strike. Discover also carries two NASA Earth Observing instruments that will gather a range of measurements for other science work. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
A Pew Research poll conducted in January shows that more than 60% of Americans support President Obama's decision in December to establish full diplomatic relations with Cuba and move toward ending the economic embargo in place since the Kennedy administration in the 1960s. Among the strongest supporters for ending the embargo are American farmers, who see Cuba as a relatively new market for exports. VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports.
The planting season is still several months away for Illinois farmer Thomas Martin. But he's excited about the future, a future that could see more of his products available to the once off-limits island nation of Cuba.
We grow a lot of non-GMO and hard endosperm corn, which goes almost exclusively into export markets. So we definitely would see a benefit for our own operation.
Lifting the embargo, Martin says, could help him increase his profits by 15%. Sending his products to Cuba, which imports about 80% of its food, would have been unheard of for his father.
The entire time my father and my uncles would have been farming, we have actually had an embargo in place. It's been over 54 years that we have had that market not open for us here in the U.S.
Martin is among a group of farmers pushing lawmakers to lift the embargo. But even before President Obama announced the opening to Cuba, products from Illinois fields were already reaching the Cuban people. Mark Albertson is with the Illinois Soybean Association.
Agriculture has been exempt from the embargo thanks to the Trade Sanctions and Reform Act under Bill Clinton. But we still have to jump through a lot of hoops.
One of the hoops is that the U.S. cannot extend credit to Cuba. The Cubans have to pay in cash up front.
And that makes us very uncompetitive. And we've seen a dramatic decline in our ag exports to Cuba in recent years.
We believe that economic development is freedom.
Paul Johnson is the vice chair of the U.S. Agricultural Coalition for Cuba.
And what we do is represent U.S. agriculture in our efforts to improve trade relations with Cuba.
Johnson says by ending the embargo and extending credit to Cuba, the United States becomes more competitive, especially because of its proximity to the island.
I think business companies are quite excited about those opportunities.
So excited, in fact, that spaces on a trip to Cuba Johnson is leading filled up quickly. Farmer Thomas Martin is one of about 75 agriculture and business representatives traveling with Johnson to the island nation in March. It will be Martin's second trip to Cuba, and while he is optimistic about future trade, he is also realistic about the challenges.
There's definitely a lot of issues we have to work through with human rights. As both a farmer and a Catholic, you know, I definitely saw that there's a lot of churches closed there, and that's something that definitely concerns me in Cuba, is their human rights record. That said, 54 years of our embargo has done very, very little as far as improving the human rights conditions in Cuba.
It's time to try something new.
In his State of the Union address, President Obama called on Congress to begin the work of ending the embargo. And Martin hopes when it comes time to drive his corn and soy to grain elevators next year, more of it will eventually find its way to Cuba. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Bloomington, Illinois.
Researchers have developed a smart insulin that automatically regulates the amount of blood sugar in people with type 1 diabetes. This would be a breakthrough for patients who struggle every day to maintain healthy blood glucose levels. VOA's Jessica Berman visits the cafe with this report.
Type 1 diabetes occurs when the body's immune system attacks and destroys its own insulin-producing pancreatic cells. Insulin is a hormone that helps metabolize glucose from food, which cells use for fuel. People with type 1 diabetes must frequently check their glucose levels and inject themselves with insulin, sometimes many times a day, but the routine is imprecise. Too little insulin causes a rise in blood sugar that, over time, can lead to serious complications, including heart disease, kidney failure, and blindness. But if type 1 diabetics accidentally take too much insulin, they risk falling into a dangerous coma.
The idea, I think, that kind of the pie in the sky vision, so to speak, would be to have something that's completely autonomous. So if a patient didn't have to check their blood glucose level, if they could take a shot in the morning and know that they're covered for the day, that would be the best case scenario. I don't think what we have now is there yet, but I think that's where the generation of a truly smart glucose-responsive insulin would go.
Matthew Weber is a biomedical engineer at Massachusetts Institute of Technology who helped develop a smart insulin that self-activates when blood sugar levels rise. A single injection of the long-acting agent binds to glucose molecules circulating in the blood, automatically bringing blood sugar levels down when they soar. Weber says researchers conducted tests using laboratory animals.
We can inject it into the mice, and when we simulate a meal 3 hours following insulin administration, blood glucose level in our treated group goes up and comes right back down the way you would expect after a meal in a healthy animal. And if we give the animals regular insulin, the kind of stuff that a diabetic patient might take, the blood glucose level goes up and stays up. So it has a longer lasting effect, and it also has a very rapid reversal of blood glucose.
The test shows that the smart insulin worked for at least 14 hours, repeatedly and automatically lowering blood sugar levels in the mice. The work was published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Researchers are hoping next to conduct human clinical trials of what would be the first glucose response insulin. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Many shark species are endangered or threatened, the result of fishing, climate change, and ocean pollution. Mike O'Sullivan joins us from Honolulu with word that scientists are getting a shark's eye view of their environment to better understand the threats that face this important predator.
The University of Hawaii research site on Coconut Island is just minutes by motorboat from the shore of Oahu, the most populated island in the Hawaiian chain. The facility is a good place to observe sharks since they are native to local waters, and some are kept in this sheltered bay for study. Carl Meyer does research on sharks and tries to learn about their habits.
When sharks are feeding and hopefully how much they're eating, and that's what we use these captive animals for.
Scientists also monitor the behavior of sharks at sea, placing sensing pellets in their food to monitor digestion, measuring the animals, and then releasing them with radio-equipped electronic tags attached to their fins. The researchers study tiger sharks, sandbar sharks, blacktip sharks, and others, and they recently fitted a sandbar shark with a camera for a rare shark's eye view of its daily activities.
When we recovered the camera, we saw that the shark had spent the day in a large aggregation of sharks, not just sandbar sharks, but also blacktip sharks and many, many scalloped hammerhead sharks.
Sharks are swift and lethal, but don't usually prey on humans. Meyer says that rare attacks are amplified by the media and dramatized in films, like the 1975 thriller Jaws. He says sharks are important top-level predators that help maintain the balance of the marine systems. Those systems are threatened by pollution, climate change, and commercial fishing, as fishermen target sharks for the Asian food market and kill them in the process of harvesting other species. University of Hawaii scientists are studying endangered and vulnerable shark populations, and Carl Meyer says that humans are more of a risk to sharks than sharks to humans.
Because never before in the natural history of the world have we seen a species become so dominant and so able to alter the natural environment.
And he says the results of those environmental changes cannot always be predicted. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Coconut Island, Hawaii.
Robots performing tasks according to a predetermined set of instructions are nothing new. But robots capable of learning how to do something by watching videos are a completely different approach, pursued by a group of researchers at the University of Maryland. VOA's George Putich has more.
If you have posted a video of your favorite recipe on the popular website YouTube, chances are that it will be tried by a robot.
There exists a gargantuan amount of video information in the Internet, which we can capitalize on and use our robots in order to learn.
University of Maryland professor Yanis Alimonos leads a team that is trying to teach a robot how to reproduce simple tasks by watching videos. At the moment, the videos are fed electronically, says research scientist Cornelia Fermiller.
Originally, actually, we took our own videos. So our own cameras looking at ourselves doing the cooking. And as it advances, it moved on to good quality videos, and it will move on to even lesser quality homemade videos.
So far, the robot named Julia can pour ingredients, add dressing, and stir a simple salad. It learns by breaking each task into basic components, such as grasping a spoon, bringing it to the bowl, stirring the salad, and observing the results. As Julia can see, hear, and remember things, and then combine those components to execute certain tasks, Alimonos says the project amounts to integration of all those capabilities.
How do we demonstrate this capability? By basically developing software that utilizes the perception, things that you see or hear, the knowledge that you have somehow in the computer organized appropriately, and the motor capabilities, the ability that you have to move your hands and your fingers and affect the world.
Alimonos says one of the problems the researchers are trying to solve is how to make the robot understand and utilize what it learns during the performance of a certain task, the so-called feedback. Another problem, he says, will be the introduction of language. But, he says, we don't need that in order to create a new world in which the robots will be working for us. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have for this week's program. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty. Check our website at voanews.com. and our Facebook page at VOA American Cafe. And we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email from wherever you are to our studios here in Washington, D.C. Email us at americancafe@voanews.com. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe.